The content of this show is subject to contain sensitive language and explicit content intended for mature audiences only.
We're
I have
having therapy.
exciting news.
What is it?
I'm starting an OnlyFans.
Why would you wait till I take a drink to say some dumb shit?
Kind of hoping that we'd get a nice little end of the world after that, but
But you know, like live, laugh, toast, or bath.
I've considered slipping into a bathtub while blow drying my hair
DeLulu is the Salulu.
because I truly don't. I have this overwhelming feeling of not knowing actually where my mental stability lies right now.
Yeah, it's been hard today, and I'm just gonna do the podcast and drink my iced tea in my cute little mental health cup that I got at the craft fair this weekend, and it brings me joy.
And we are back to present you with season 2, episode 6 of the Trigger Warning Podcast. And here we are, both with different hair colors than we had during the last time we shot an episode.
I truly tried to stay blonde, but those manic episodes just hit hard, you know?
Do I know? Do I know?
You have no experience with a manic episode.
Over my head. If you have yet to do so, or if you recently discovered our podcast and are here with us today, please head over to our YouTube, Instagram, or any major podcasting platforms to subscribe, follow, share, and engage with us. You can find direct platform links on our website, www.trigger-warning-podcast.com, as well as our most recent videos under the episode tab on the website. We have been filming this podcast for a total of 8 months now, and regardless of anything, I am so thankful that we've had the pleasure of sharing this journey together. So much of me actually wishes we would have planned this out and executed this show sooner than we did.
This platform and working with you has been like some type of therapy for me over the last year. And I know we just actually discussed this before starting filming that our therapy sessions are right before this episode. And I know we've gone through a lot together just in our lives, and now we're doing this. And I just could not be more thankful.
Me either. So, life is just being in a constant state of what the is going on. Instead of having my soul cleansed and my house saged, I need to be lit on fire with sage. Becoming an adult is constantly getting blindsided by the universe, completely rerouting the directions to get to your final destination. Then being in a constant state of wonder of what will in fact be the final destination. I'm constantly stuck in the state of wondering where I am, where I'm going, and when I'm going to see the intended outcome the universe has planned for me. I wonder when I'm ever going to be given the chance to control the timing of anything in life, because for the last I don't know how many years, timing just never seems to be on my side. I feel like so many things that the universe, excuse me, throws at us is quite literally criminal at the very least. Every single day I wake up, gain consciousness to understand that I'm still alive, yet wondering why I'm still alive. Spend 6 hours and 57 minutes coping with the fact that I am still alive before I can fathom getting off the couch and finally gain the ability to be as productive as possible. I start picking apart every aspect of my life. I think about the times that the universe has actually led me down a path that was meant to be a part of my journey that I'm grateful for in order to maintain my faith that the universe does indeed always have a plan. However, it just seems like I'm stuck in the longest lasting period of time where the universe hasn't revealed an outcome to me that justifies the constant rerouting of the course of my destination. I do believe in manifesting, and the more I invest my energy into understanding the process of manifestation, I've come to the realization that I haven't always been doing it correctly, nor have I been consistent at it. That leads me to wonder if that's why the universe hasn't revealed the destination it's planned for me all along. However, when I do reflect on life's journey and have actually seen the great things I've been provided with after taking leaps of faith, making very scary decisions that could have potentially led to horrible outcomes, but didn't, I realized I was never actually manifesting those things. I was going in blind, terrified, uneducated, but things worked out. I'm into really weird things like voodoo dolls, and I'm gonna show you one of my voodoo dolls. So this is my voodoo doll that I carry around with me for good luck. And
okay.
You can't really see it that well on camera, but he's got a little lucky charm here, and he's missing an eyeball.
And love that for him.
He had an eyeball when I bought him. At some point during our relationship, he lost his eyeball, the way people lose their minds when they're around me. But he's still so cute, and it's added more character to his looks and represents that we've been through a lot together. I also have a blessing angel that I carry with me. My very Hispanic grandmother visits her family in Mexico typically every year. When she returns from Mexico, she always has this special Mexican holy water she uses to bless things. I don't know who blesses this water, where it's blessed or how it's blessed, but I trust this woman. So I did have my grandmother bless my blessing angel with holy water. I believe in her faith and trust in her holy water. I have no idea what this blessed holy water has done for me, but I do feel safe when I'm carrying it. The next time I do see her, though, I'm going to ask her to spray and flick that shit all over my body, but I am scared that I'll start smoking and sizzling because, you know, these demons within me have a massively fierce presence. I don't want my grandmother to fear that I have to have an exorcism performed on me. I've lived with these demons for a very long time, but even I fear the thought of them completely emerging themselves, because I know they'd be spitting acid, talking mad shit, and would most definitely kill whoever my grandmother would fly in straight from Mexico to perform the exorcism on me. I also have one of those magic eight balls, and every time I ask it a question, I kid you not, it always provides me with this answer: ask again. But Tori, it is that time in the episode where I ask that very important question. M&M, how are you doing today? I'm kidding. Obviously, what the hell is up in your world?
You know, I read the show notes, and you got these little jokes in there, and I always think, okay, that's funny. And then you actually say them, and I am not one that cannot laugh in a situation. Okay, I don't look at me if something is remotely funny. Don't make a face, nothing, because I can't handle it. So I apologize to our listeners right now. I can't not laugh, and I'm going to do that because I have a problem. But on another note, it is homecoming week. And we have a lot going on. I have a niece and a nephew that are going to homecoming. We have sports where they're going to be in the homecoming parade, and I am swamped. But we also just went camping last weekend, and the kids had an absolute blast. My nephew and my extra child ventured down the creek and caught frogs, which was very fun, and I enjoyed their stories about it. However, they did get in about this much trouble, and if you are not watching on YouTube, that was about an inch between my fingers, because they decided they were going to venture almost a mile away from our campsite in the creek, not along the bank, physically walking through the creek, to catch frogs and, I quote, explore nature. And if I didn't think those boys were like me, I was totally wrong because I would have done the same thing. My husband, at one point, we were sitting there, and I'm like, "Hey, haven't seen the boys for a while." And he's like, "Oh, they were in the creek." So I walk over to the bank because we're right there. They're not there, and of course, my brain goes, "They drowned. They were kidnapped. Chupacabra, werewolf, whatever you can think of, something bad happened to them." So I walk down the bank as far as this campground goes. I don't see them. I am yelling their name. I am panicking. I'm freaking out. I run. I'm not a runner. I run back to my husband, and his brain, thank God, does not work like mine. And he was like, "I'm gonna go find him." Hops in the water. It is about waist deep the entire walk. Sets his smartwatch to track his distance. Finds out that they were 3/4 of a mile away down the creek. He finds them catching frogs. On a little sandbar that they had found, and they came back with their heads hanging low, like dogs who had just gotten into a garbage can and knew they had done wrong, but it was worth it. They were so excited to tell me that they caught frogs, and every chance they got to say that, Ian said, "Yeah, 3/4 of a mile away." And so that's now a new joke in the family, is that they traveled 3/4 of a mile away from the campsite. But in other news, my girls had a blast. They were feral, embraced the camping lifestyle, and I'm also trying to convince my husband that we need another kitten simply because my niece's cat had kittens. What's one more if we already have one? But anyways, I am living, I am laughing, and I have not toaster bathed this week yet. How's life been treating you?
I'm proud of you. First of all, I would like to point out that I love when you laugh at my jokes because it solidifies the fact that I am a comedic genius,
You are.
which I've always known. Secondly, that's some dedication those boys had to simply catch some frogs. Serious dedication. My sister caught a frog months
I love
ago
frogs.
and has kept it alive this entire freaking time. And I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. It's been 6 months, I think,
That is
approximately.
impressive. Does it have a name? I need to
I
know.
think so, but I didn't care to ask.
Oh, can you please ask her, but simply for me?
I'll try to remember to do so.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Or if you're listening, Selena's sister, please just send me a little DM with the frog's name.
I'm sure she'll do
Can't wait.
that. So my 3 year wedding anniversary with my husband was this past Tuesday. My husband and I have been together for about a decade and a half now. Anyone that knew us back in high school in the very beginning of our relationship could have felt incredibly confident enough to place a significant amount of money on the line to bet that we'd never make it this long. And the idea of us getting married would be absolutely comical. I myself genuinely did not expect our relationship to last for very long either. I'm happy to say that I was absolutely wrong to think so. Like I said before, some people do deserve second or even third chances, so long as those people do put forth the effort into doing serious self-reflecting, taking accountability, and making significant changes to better themselves. in turn play their part in repairing the cracks in the initial foundation of a partnership and continued maintenance of that foundation. The maintenance of the foundation of a partnership is never over. Both parties must actively continue maintaining that foundation and building on it. The people we used to be at the start of our relationship no longer exist. We've both taken significant strides in our growth, both personally and together as partners. When I say the statement, "We've been through hell and back," that doesn't even come close to representing the truth of the unimaginable things we've conquered together that's allowed us to come out stronger every single day. Even though our marriage is in a great place right now, the reality is that it's not always sunshine and rainbows. We've gone through periods of being distant, complete avoidance in many aspects. Coming together is the beginning. Keeping together is a process, and working together is success. You and I are both married to the person we started dating in high school, and you and I both know that the odds are against us. Even if we didn't start our relationships so young, the divorce rates are simply just so high. It can be easy for us to sit here and say that people give up too quickly and don't put forth the effort it takes to make it work, but there are many other factors that play a part in unsuccessful marriages, like being victims of domestic violence, cheating, growing apart and changing in ways that no longer allow partners to work together with multiple failed attempts at trying to make it work, losing your partner to substance abuse and addiction after many failed attempts at trying to help them overcome those demons. I can sit here and say for a fact that I don't find marriage difficult. Life is just so hard for so many and so unpredictable. But it comes down to how you and your partner choose to come together as one and defeat each challenge that presents itself. Recently, Mike and I have been met with some incredibly scary hardships that have impacted our lives tremendously. And these things truly could not have happened at a worse time. At this time, I cannot get into the details of the specifics of our situation. I know I've promised to be real and raw on our show, and I still stand behind that. However, there are boundaries that still have to apply. This simply involves more than just myself. At this time, it's important to me to protect the small amount of peace that myself and Mike still have to hold on to. We are still in a very sensitive stage of processing the situation. And to clarify, this has nothing to do with the stability of our relationship. We've been met with some beyond difficult decisions to make. There's so much to what's happened that it's taken a lot of time to process and left us with so many unanswered questions. Our sense of security has been significantly impacted, and it's beyond terrifying. Right now, we have no idea what the outcome will be. We are basically at a standstill. Being that I am the one that is constantly battling serious mental health disorders, I'm often the one barely standing. Over the course of our life together, Mike is constantly learning how to react, how he can help me, and understand how mental illnesses work. He will never have all the answers, and I will never expect him to. He will never be able to help me in the ways he so badly wants to, but the truth is, when I've been at my lowest of lows, only I can help myself by being honest with my mental health professional, not wallowing in self-pity, taking small steps every single day to regain my sense of mental stability. I simply refuse to put pressure on him in the aspect of expecting him to help me when it's me that is at war with my brain. I cannot allow myself to be selfish by expecting him to truly understand something he does not struggle with himself. He's been the other leg I need to help stand me up straight in many ways. My sense of hope has deteriorated right in front of Mike's face. And right now, it's more important than ever for us to stand together as strong as we can and hold each other up as we maneuver through this hardship. It doesn't matter how badly a situation that impacts both of us is capable of impacting my mental stability because of my mental health disorders, but not impact him in the same exact sense. I still have to stand beside my husband and be the light that he needs, even if my own light is running out of batteries. The very reason I share this is because this is a glimpse of the reality of the fact that there are many obstacles life will present us with. No matter how hard you work for anything in life, you will never be able to control the unknown. No matter how differently a situation can be individually affecting our mental state, the hardships we encounter together aren't different in any other aspect. We must work together as a team to get through the hardships to the best of our abilities.
And I personally, you know what your situation is. And Ian and I love you two so much. We will always support you two and be there for you because you're like our favorite couple. And I think you know that for some weird reason, whenever we get together, Mike and Ian just scurry away and do little Mike and Ian things. And it's wonderful. We love you so much.
And we love you too, both so much too. And thank you for
You're welcome.
The kind words, because you know, right now I really need them. If you've been watching or listening to season two of our show thus far, you've heard me mention that I've made connections on platforms to gather ideas on what topics the public would be interested in hearing being discussed on our show. There were a couple individuals that wanted to hear us talk about loving someone that is an addict. When I first read through those recommendations, I thought, oh, we can absolutely do a show based around that topic. It's a topic that aligns with the general content of our show. Once it came down to trying to piece together an episode based around that topic, I realized that I have never been in a relationship with an addict. After discussing it with Tori, we both agreed that we have no real personal relation to this topic. We want to carefully curate each episode with topics that we can personally connect with and relate that connection with our own personal truths. Having that personal connection to topics we choose for each episode is so important in order to genuinely relate to our audiences in ways that can help individuals struggling that relate have a sense of being seen, understood, and validated. I do have family members that I love dearly that I've lost due to their battle with addiction, which has impacted me, and I do feel pain, sadness, and wish more than anything that they could find their strength to win that battle. However, I know that when the topic was given to me as a suggestion, those individuals were relating that directly to loving a partner that is an addict. It doesn't feel right to us to build an episode solely based on thorough research in order to provide information to build off of, to validate and understand that very specific kind of personal and terrifying experience. Our last episode of season one featured an interview with my brother-in-law that battled with addiction and spoke about what he experienced directly and offered some very meaningful advice. If you are someone that is in love with an addict and have not seen that episode, it is available on YouTube. On our website, under our resources tab, I have direct resource links related to this very thing, including a resource link sourced from the National Alliance on Mental Illness called Supporting Friends with Addiction, which is not specifically based around simply supporting friends, but does relate to supporting partners as well. This link is labeled as a resource from episode 8, which was the last episode aired in season 1 of our show. I have also done some more deep diving and thorough research to find more specific resources relating to loving an addict that is a partner. These links will be listed in the same spot labeled as Season 2, Episode 6. I truly hope that those that are in love with and that need help, guidance, or advice, or any of the sort, can benefit from the resources I've provided. I also truly hope that your loved one battling addiction is able to find the light and strength it takes to overcome those demons and can live on to share their story, inspire others, and live the rest of their life in all of the ways that they deserve. And for those of you that are the ones in love with an addict, our hearts lie with you. You deserve all the love in the world, and your strength and the part you play in your loved one's life holds so much significance. When they defeat those demons, they will never forget you were the one person going through great lengths to fight the battle alongside of them.
I love that topic because I also have a few family members who have struggled with addiction. But you're right, we don't have the materials or the background to work on that topic as it relates to a loved one, significant other sense of having an addiction. But I do love that topic, and it is something that we could explore, but in a different aspect at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved it as well. I thought it was a great recommendation, but like we agreed, it just simply doesn't feel right to have that lack of connection to loving a partner that that struggles with addiction and substance abuse in any aspect.
I agree.
Over the course of several decades, one of the most commonly misdiagnosed and mistreated mental health disorders is bipolar disorder. Up until just a few years ago, bipolar disorder was diagnosed as manic bipolar depressive disorder. For many years, this disorder has lacked many studies behind it, lacked many treatment options, and mental health professionals lacked an immense amount of knowledge behind the disorder. Bipolar disorder is no longer labeled as it once was for decades. The disorder now has three main diagnoses, being bipolar 1, bipolar 2, and cyclomatic disorder. As more studies emerge, there is still a significant lack of understanding and knowledge provided, which contributes to the disorder being so commonly misdiagnosed and mistreated. The general description of bipolar disorder is a mental illness that causes extreme mood swings, energy shifts, and changes in activity levels. Even now that the disorder has three main diagnoses, once an individual is presented with a bipolar diagnosis, it takes a lot of time to narrow down the specifics in which of the three diagnoses one falls under. There are various symptoms of mania associated with these disorders that are used to determine which of the three bipolar diagnoses you may have. And those are hypomania, acute mania, delusional mania, and delirious mania. Determining which of these three types of bipolar disorders a person may have comes with assessing which types of mania and other symptoms are present during a person's most severe episode, which is why it takes so long to come to that final determination. In turn, results in what can turn into years of trial and error of different treatment options to finally find the treatment that benefits each individual and prolongs the length of the ability for a mental health professional to determine essentially what category of the diagnosis an individual has. Bipolar disorder also has many similarities to borderline personality disorder. It can be very difficult to differentiate those two disorders. Both disorders have multiple symptoms in common, including but not limited to extreme impulsiveness, reckless behavior, extreme mood instability, self-destructive behavior, manic episodes, very severe depressive episodes, and severe anxiety. Each of those symptoms present differently amongst those that suffer with those disorders. In 2021, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Both my grandfather and my aunt on my mother's side have also been diagnosed as bipolar. The initial diagnosis for me came as a huge surprise. I witnessed firsthand the way my aunt struggled, and it was evidently clear she suffered with this disorder to the highest extent. My mom told me stories about my grandfather and the way he struggled with his mental health, and that too made it very clear to me that he was, in fact, absolutely bipolar. I never got to see it firsthand in the way that the disorder impacted my grandfather in the ways that my mom did see it. Luckily, he was put on a treatment regimen that helped him regain as much mental stability as possible. So I never witnessed it to the extent that my mother had to witness it. Although he was in and out of psych facilities over the course of many years before regaining his sense of stability. As for me, it wasn't clear to me in the beginning why it was determined that I was bipolar. Sheer panic really set in when I started to think about my childhood and the time I spent with my aunt without ever seeing symptoms present in her that represented the severity of her bipolar disorder. But when I got older, it was like a flip of a switch, and she just spiraled. I watched her go in and out of the darkest, most traumatic depressive episodes. Then she'd come out of those depressive episodes, and the manic episodes were so undeniably present. Around the time I received my bipolar diagnosis, I had spiraled into the deepest, darkest, depressive episode I'd ever experienced in my life. I had already been seeing many different healthcare professionals pleading for help, and nothing seemed to be working. I hit a point where I was losing faith in the idea that I would ever come out of that alive. I made what I felt was a final resort decision. I requested a referral to see a psychiatrist at a hospital well known in our area for having exceptional mental health care providers. I walked into that first appointment with my new psychiatrist and immediately regained my faith. She was the first health care provider that had reviewed my medical history in great detail prior to my first appointment and was fully prepared to do everything in her power to save me. But it wasn't until quite a few appointments with her until I received that bipolar diagnosis. It was a matter of taking the time to really understand my history of mental illnesses and the ways it impacted my quality of life in every single aspect. Each appointment consisted of going into great detail about my daily struggles. Regardless of the fact that the diagnosis itself was surprising to me, at that point, I had every reason to trust her. From that point, it was that process of figuring out what medications I needed to be on to stabilize me in every aspect of what I was struggling with mentally. Now, we all know how long that process actually takes. So while I was undergoing the process of weaning off medications my previous healthcare providers had put me on, while slowly adding medications along the way, I was a long way away from seeing any sort of improvement. But I simply had to just trust the process. While undergoing that process, each appointment really brought me a lot of clarity in the sense that I had no idea the symptoms of the disorder had actually been present since I was around the age of 17, which is actually the age that it has been determined that that disorder starts presenting itself in an individual. I started reflecting on all of the things that had been present within me for so long, and I didn't even realize it. Self-destruction, reckless behavior, extreme highs, extreme lows, an intense amount of impulsivity, unhealthy obsessions, self-harm, overwhelming feelings of irritability, and constant unhealthy obsessions. I had a pattern of unhealthy habits that I was unconsciously doing in order to try to relieve whatever I was feeling at any given moment. I constantly spent money on anything I felt would provide me with what I now understand was my attempt to feel that dopamine release. But the purchases never provided me with joy for any length of time, which in turn led me to continue spending money on things I would find myself forgetting about not long after, but was a pattern and addiction that I could not let go of. And I do still struggle with this to this very day. I obsessed over losing weight and dieting in an extremely unhealthy way and over-exercising on a daily basis. I was so obsessed with the number on the scale. I weighed myself every single day and was never satisfied with the number on the scale. I'd even set goal weights for myself, hit that goal weight without feeling proud about hitting my goal weight. And I simply never allowed myself to stop at any goal weight I'd achieve. Again, this is something I still struggle with, just not to that extreme. I have actually taken the batteries out of my scale, hid my scale in a closet full of so much junk that it would take me a long time to even find it in order to prevent myself from thinking about it. Every single doctor appointment I have with both my primary care physician and my psychiatrist, I have to be weighed. And in turn, I have to turn my head away so that I don't see the number on the scale because I know for a fact that it will still trigger me. At a certain point during a weight loss journey, you hit a plateau and it becomes more difficult to continue losing weight no matter the consistency of exercise or increasing the amount of daily exercising. When I was met with the plateau, that triggered my eating disorder. That rapidly progressed as my obsession continued in the attempt to fulfill that sense of dissatisfaction. The first time I ever self-harmed was when I was 17, and I remember it so vividly. I was constantly breaking down over and over, and the pain was so intense, I felt like I had no other choice but to inflict physical pain on myself that would overpower the never-ending pain I was feeling coming from my mind. And it helped during the moment, but would soon pass, and I'd do it over and over again. I did stop self-harming for a significant length of time. However, at the time, I spiraled into the worst depressive episode I'd ever experienced back in 2021. I started self-harming again. When I started doing it again, it was so much worse than what I had done when I was 17. I would find myself on my bathroom floor between 2 to 3 in the morning in shambles, unable to breathe. I was vomiting and absolutely mutilating myself. Blood was gushing from severe cuts on both of my legs. But I continued to cut deeper and deeper into those same cuts and make brand new cuts right below each one, and then do it all over again the very next day, cutting right into the same cuts I already created, continually digging deeper and deeper. When I turned 18, Mike moved in with me, and 4 months after my 18th birthday, he turned 21. And that resulted in very easy access to alcohol at all times. There was always alcohol in my fridge. There were times I'd be home alone and when my emotions were all over the place and I needed a way to numb myself, I would just start chugging alcohol until reaching the point of being completely belligerent. I often blacked out from rage over things that were not even remotely serious in retrospect. A lot of times that rage came from my brain creating pretenses and false narratives and overpowering my sense of reality. Those are just some of the behaviors I knew were present as I reflected on my diagnosis and the actions throughout the course of the time when I realized the symptoms were visibly present. During that period of time back in 2021, while I had hit the worst of my depressive episode, it took months to finally feel like I was coming out of that depressive episode. And once I did start feeling that depressive episode lifting, I felt this overwhelming sense of energy lingering over me that still did not feel right to me. It felt as though I was watching myself from the outside of my body and I didn't feel like myself. Although it is very difficult to regain that sense of feeling like yourself again after a deep depressive episode, I was mindlessly acting like a completely different person, yet still felt this weird sense of power, and that's the only way that I can really explain it, outside of essentially having a God complex. I knew I felt better than I did, but not in the right way. That feeling lasted for an extended period of time until it finally hit me that I was thrown full force into a manic episode. I was representing this superiority complex in a way. I felt more confident in myself than I'd ever felt in my life. I so confident, I felt invincible. I had severely impulsive behavior that once again led me down the road of self-destruction. I was surviving on very minimal amount of sleep, yet felt like I had the highest amount of energy in my entire life. While being up super late during the night, I was having constant thoughts of how successful I could be and do things that were incredibly unattainable. One of those things being that I thought I could build a nonprofit organization online from the ground up, which I actually did attempt to do and got to the whole tax portion of the process and quit that immediately because that was well beyond my realm of knowledge, no matter how confident I felt in myself at the time. I couldn't even begin to remember what the hell I was creating this nonprofit organization based off of. I do know it was indeed a completely insane concept my brain curated with my spiraling thoughts. It's quite literally beyond hysterical to think about now, me thinking I could build an entire nonprofit organization. Really? I disassociated so much. I was truly not interested in anyone else but myself because of that superiority complex that I felt. I was going out to bars and drinking on a frequent basis and spending money I did not have. I made several TikTok videos on my account when I had never used TikTok to post content of myself prior to that. After the manic episode ended, I went back through the videos I created and I did not recall making a single one of those videos. I ended up deleting several of them. There are still some I kept on my account. I don't really know why. Maybe as a way to go back and remind myself how I acted during the manic episode in order to see those signs when I do feel another manic episode approaching. Unfortunately, I had no idea I was going through a manic episode until I was in far too deep. I now know that I didn't realize it for so long because it did, in fact, feel much better than the depressive episode. Then one day, the mania just ended, and suddenly I was thrown right back into a deep depressive episode again. It was absolutely horrifying that my brain could throw me into a deep depressive episode then a severe manic episode, and right back into another deep depressive episode. All of that information I just shared from my experience is just a general perspective of it all. There's so much more that I could take you through, but it would take me hours to explain the entirety of it all. Once I was finally able to regain a sense of mental stability by building on my medication regimen, the cycle stopped for a while. But the harsh reality of this disorder is that it never completely ends, no matter what. It involves constant medication changes, dose adjustments, and self-rehabilitation over and over. The regimen that gave you your sense of stability back to whatever degree can stop working and the cycle starts all over again. I can never shake the feeling of fear at any given moment. A depressive episode will hit me hard again and then throw me into a manic episode, and the process has to start all over. You can only control so much of this disorder. The ways that I know I have a sense of control is by doing the following. Forcing myself to go to every single appointment with my psychiatrist and be completely honest at every single appointment. Do not hide a single thing from your mental health professional. Do not pretend you're doing okay if you truly do not feel confident in the fact that you are doing okay, even if you're not in a depressive episode or any of the sort. For every single appointment, I document what I've been experiencing since my last appointment. I document any medication adjustments during every single appointment and discuss whether or not I have felt the desired outcome from the medication. If I feel as though a certain medication is helping in specific areas but not covering all the bases I need covered, I discuss how it is helping and how it is not helping. I do thorough research on my mental health disorders and thorough research on medications I find that are used to treat the specific mental health disorders I have. I research stories, testimonies, and reviews on medications to prepare myself with recommendations on medications that may work for me based on what I am still lacking when it comes to my mental stability and what I want to be improved. I document the steps I've taken personally to cope with my mental illnesses outside of the treatments provided by my psychiatrist. You have to have a real sense of understanding that there is never going to be a medication regimen that will completely fix you without taking steps to work on yourself personally in order to aid in maintaining stability. I take the time to reflect on my experiences and figure out what my triggers are and try to avoid what I've determined will most likely definitely trigger me in any aspect. I have never been able to maintain a solid routine every single day, but there are things I know I must do every single day, no matter the lack of energy, motivation, patience, or the amount of anxiety I may have. I do my best to allow myself grace for the things I cannot control. And as long as I've done what I know I must do every single day, I make damn sure I take the time to acknowledge that I still did those things no matter any circumstance. I've gone through great lengths to build and maintain boundaries to protect my sense of peace and energy. Many of the boundaries I've built and try to maintain every single day are things Tori and I actually discussed in our very last episode.
I feel all of what you just said so hard. Being diagnosed with a mental disorder starts off in such a scary and terrifying way. And I remember when I was initially diagnosed, I was diagnosed as having insomnia. And I now know that I have ADHD, generalized anxiety, and depression. I remember being put on sleeping meds at 14, which did not help, if that comes as any surprise to you. and I was just tired and anxious. A tired little chihuahua who really just wanted to cry at the same time is how my mental state was. But once I finally understood that that was not the correct diagnosis, I was able to find better strategies to help myself cope. And I say cope because we know, both of us know, there is no cure for mental health, though I do wish there was, and I know you also wish there was. But my entire family, just like yours, has suffered for as long as I can remember with just about every mental health disorder imaginable in my family history. This, however, does not help with coping. But again, you and I both know it does give an explanation of our symptoms and reasons why we have them.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Bipolar disorder is a very difficult disorder to both manage and understand. As I stated, bipolar disorder and borderline personality disorder are two disorders with the most common symptoms that can be hard to differentiate. Those are absolutely not the only two mental health disorders that can cause manic episodes. There are actually a multitude of disorders and even personal experiences a person may encounter even just once in their life that can trigger a manic episode. Even if the person does not struggle with a mental health disorder, that are known to cause a person to fall into a manic episode. Some of those disorders include seasonal affective disorder, schizoaffective disorder, ADHD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, postpartum depression. Outside of those disorders, personal factors that can cause a person to experience a manic episode include substance use, physical medical conditions, a consistent pattern of high stress levels, patterns of lack of sleep, trauma and abuse, significant life changes, difficult life conditions, suffering and grieving any kind of loss. It is beyond the highest level of importance to understand that prolonged mania without treatment of any kind can result in psychosis, and psychosis can become permanent and extremely detrimental. For this episode, I will have a significant amount of resources relating to bipolar disorders, mania, psychosis, disassociation, ways to manage your diagnosis outside of any source of professional treatment, and steps you can take to ensure you are prepared for a mental health care professional appointment to aid in your ability to cover everything you need to during the appointment in order for your provider to determine the proper treatment options.
I want to touch on one of the symptoms you mentioned, which was disassociation. That is a huge symptom of mine. This is one aspect of my mental health that I've never fully gained control over. I know that I should see a professional about this. However, I'm busy and I task avoid like there are 57 hours in a day. But disassociation is so difficult and is so significant in the lives of people that have mental health disorders. And I know that I'm doing what I call eloping, which if some of you are not familiar with that term, it pretty much just means leaving a situation. However, I'm only mentally leaving my situation. Then this causes, as you know, a wave of anxiety. And after those waves of anxiety, I've referred to as blackouts, which is where I realize that I'm now coming to in a sense, and I have no recollection of previous moments that just took place. Thankfully, this normally only happens in high stress situations for me and when I've not been in a place that I'm familiar with. I've also noticed that my autopilot can trigger this type of episode where I am suddenly coming to in a sense. And I will realize that I was on a little, I don't know, brain vacation, if you will, but that I was acting normally according to those around me that know me personally. It was as if my brain returned without a passport and was not allowed back in the country without a fight, or in my experience, a panic attack. And to those of you that struggle with dissociation, I have found the most simple thing. It's a grounding technique. A lot of people have heard about this, and it's the five things, the five rules, what I call it. And it is when you can verbally say five things that you see, four things you touch, three things you hear, two things you smell, and one thing that you can taste. I know that a lot of people associate this with, oh my gosh, there's another silly little thing, but it has helped me in the sense that it can give me just a few minutes to get my bearings and stop a full-blown panic attack.
Thank you for sharing that because I truly had no idea. I'd never heard of eloping from disassociation. So that's something I'd like to include in my resources as well and take note of because that hits me because I'd never heard of it before, and I've done very thorough research. And if you wouldn't mind, after this episode,
I'm
sharing
not
with
going to
me.
share you.
I understand. I'm a very hard person to share. If you wouldn't mind sharing those things that you typically, those verbally five things that you typically look for to see and four things that you look for to touch and three things that you try to hear and two things that you try to smell and one thing that you can taste, provide me with some of those things that have helped you because I'd like to share those resources as well because those are like you said. Yeah, it can sound like one of those silly little coping mechanisms that may not work for everybody, but they work for you. And even if they don't work for somebody else, they will work for other people. And even if they seem silly, it's still worth trying. And you should never, ever, ever not try a coping mechanism simply because it seems silly, because then you will never know if it's going to work or not.
I agree. I will share those with you.
Thank you. I do want to take this time to talk about the time when I was 17 years old and was self-harming, and nobody knew, really. Like, I was, of course, in my relationship with Mike, and I remember I was able to hide it from him, my mother, family members, friends. And I remember at the time of the place I was living in, I had this walk-in closet, and I had a friend over, and it was during prom, and I was borrowing a prom dress, and she had given it to me, then come over. It was in my closet, and I reached up to grab the prom dress, and my visible self-harm inflictions were noticed by her. And she grabbed my arm, and she looked at me in the eyes, didn't say anything to me. And I grabbed my arm away and I said, I do not want to talk about this right now. And please do not share this with anyone. Now, mind you, this friend was a close friend and is still a close friend with one of my relatives. And to my knowledge, she never, ever, ever told anyone. And I respect her so much in the sense that she allowed me not to talk about it. She didn't grill me on it. And she kept my privacy because obviously that is something so severe and personal. And though some people could look at it in the aspect of, well, she should have told somebody because it could have prevented you from doing it again. But if you don't walk in my shoes, you have no idea how that situation could have turned out if she had told someone. And I know for a fact if she had told someone, the outcome would have been worse, and it would not have prevented me from self-harming again in the future. I know that for a fact. And if that friend happens to listen to this episode, I want to thank her so much for doing exactly what I told her to do for me and not grill me and not show disappointment in me in any way and just respect me in that aspect. And before I end this episode, I want to leave you all with this. You are worth a full night's sleep. You are worth being loved and having the ability to love others. You are worth pursuing things that bring you joy. You are worth protecting your peace to the best of your ability. You are worth your full attention. You are worth living a better quality of life. If you've survived another day at war with your brain, you are superior. And we're wishing you nothing but peace in your soul, your mind, and another day of surviving until you can find your way of living.
And we will see all of you lunatics in 2 weeks on Trigger Warning Podcast. Where do I subscribe?
So you said that you're gonna dye your whole hair pink again?
So I got on Amazon because I have zero self-control and I was a little manic. So I decided I was gonna buy some hair dye, and I bought a bottle that's like it's a big one of this color. Actually, I think it's slightly more neon than this color, but yeah, so it's fading already. But I got a whole bottle of it and my brain is telling me you got no plans this weekend. So
I mean, exactly. As soon as we do this podcast episode, I'm literally going to apply teeth jewelry to my teeth to represent the idea or perception that I have grills.
That is so 2002 of you.
I know. Well, actually, no, so manic episode of me because I
Right.
went through my TikTok and found a TikTok of me with this hair color, lo and behold, and teeth jewelry on. And it is funny when I talk about how hair holds memories. And when I was going through the peak of my manic episode, my hair was dark silver, and I decided to go right back to dark silver.
ha 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 ha!